Geek Actually is brought to you by listeners just like you. Thanks for your donations. If you want to get involved, send an email to feedback@geekactually.com or use the contact form on the website. Hello and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 25 for the 13th of February, 2009. I'm David McVeigh and I'm your host, and welcome to the show. Just a couple of housekeeping things to get us started off. First of all, if you're an iTunes user, can you please leave me comments? We're trying to get our statistics up and trying to move us up onto the featured page, and your comments would be greatly appreciated. If you're not an iTunes user, you're still welcome to leave comments. You leave them at geekactually.com, and we like to read comments out and stuff over the air. So if you do have any wonderful comments for us or any criticisms as well, we're big people here. We can take your criticisms. Please leave your messages on geekactually.com on the articles. Okay, well, what a show. First of all, I'm flying solo again, as you may have noticed. That's okay. We will blunder our way through as well as can be. We have a fairly full show. I've got three feature film reviews to do later on, and we've got a bunch of tech news and a bunch of film news. So first thing I'm going to do, I've got lots of pieces of paper here. You'll hear me rattling around. I've got a story here that just appealed to the geek in me. It's actually not tech or film, it's just kind of geek. And so I thought we'd run through this, if I can find it. I've kind of lost my piece of paper here. What's going on? First of all, just a bit of history as I try and find the article. You may know that DC Comics decided, we actually mentioned this on the show, just a few episodes ago, I think it was just before the Christmas special, that DC Comics was planning on killing Batman. That's not the movie franchise, this is the comic franchise. They were going to kill off the Dark Knight, and everybody was kind of up in arms about that, about what they were going to do and so forth. Well, in news.com.au today, I read this wonderful article that says that they have a replacement for Batman in the Batman comics, and I think this is open for discussion. I want feedback on this one, because I think I'm in two minds about this, and I actually don't think it's the right way to go, and be very interesting to hear what you have to say about it. But apparently, replacing Batman is a lesbian redheaded Batwoman. Her alter ego is Kathy Kane. And the article goes on to many times basically talking about her being a redheaded lesbian. And all I can think is, first of all, why is that really relevant? And second of all, judging by the picture that's actually in news.com.au, and I do encourage you to go have a look at it, the article is headlined, Lesbian Batwoman Takes Over Gotham City, is that it's not, you know, why is it that we portray all the female superheroes as these muscle-bound, you know, tough, I don't know, almost male in their structure, with their, you know, tight abs and all this sort of stuff. And all I could think is that this isn't a real lesbian. This is some comic geek writer's male fantasy of what a lesbian should be, especially considering that says that she actually fights crime in 6-inch stiletto heels. Anyway, the article actually says that she first swung into action 50 years ago, helping her boyfriend Batman rid Gotham City of villains until she was killed off in 1979. Now Batwoman is making a comeback, replacing Batman, who is missing, presumed dead, in the popular DC Comics series. So I guess they sewed her head back on. But anyway, so apparently it's a different person donning the Batwoman costume. And I don't think it is the same character as Batgirl. I think Batgirl was a different story. I could be wrong about that. DC fans, please send in your comments and let me know. All right, so that's your geeky story for the day. That's your geeky story for the day. Now, I used to be a mad comic book reader, particularly the Marvel Universe. I was always a Marvel boy. I kind of fell out of it several years ago, but I keep my finger to the pulse as to what's going on and so forth. And I actually have really given serious consideration to start reading again. I love comic books. And I love what comic book cinema is happening at the moment. And boy, are we waiting for The Watchmen or what? Now, a little bit of news on The Watchmen, actually. at Comic-Con just recently, the first 18 minutes of The Watchmen was presented to the audience, and apparently it was very strict, no recording devices or anything like that. These things always leak. I'm sure we're probably going to find something on YouTube eventually. But the general feedback has been very, very positive on this 18 minutes, including a quote from Slash Filmcast, which I just listened to today, where it is quoted, and I say this in air quotes, it was fucking awesome. And I just think that's wonderful, and I can't wait till March. So I'm looking forward to Watchmen so much. We also have Mickey Rourke's British Academy Awards speech, which I think is wonderful. And in fact, I have a little bit of it here I'm going to play for you. Mickey Rourke won Best Actor at the BAFTAs just recently, and this was his speech.
It's a pretty statue. Thank you to BAFTA, to Optimum Pictures, to Fox Searchlight. Darren Aronofsky gave me a second chance after f***ing up my career for 15 years. I want to thank my agent who put his career in jeopardy by representing me several years ago, David Unger. I want to thank my publicist Paula Woods for having the hardest job in show business, telling me where to go, what to do, when to do it, what to eat, what to dress, what the f***. Oh, God, it's such a pleasure to be here and to be back out of the darkness. I'd like to thank Marissa Tomei for putting up with me. She's a hell of a talent. It was very brave of her to take her clothes off all the time, and I enjoyed looking at her. The other thing, okay, last but not least, did I thank Peter Rice? Yeah, Peter Rice. Okay. I don't want to forget anybody. My memory's not that great. So I'd like to dedicate this to an actor who's not here anymore that was a great friend of mine, and his spirit and his talent live on, the great Richard Harris. Thank you very much.
It's a fabulous speech. It's a fabulous comeback. And in fact, one of our feature reviews this week will be The Wrestler. We'll a little bit more on that a little bit later on in the show. Okay. Now, I've got my notes the wrong way around. I've got my tech news up front and my film news up back, and it's supposed to be the other way around today. Anyway, we will continue on. Now, first of all, some little stories. On comingsoon.net, which is one of my favorite little film sites that tends to refeed a lot of information from a lot of sites, saves me going to a lot of different places, but it's a great place to start. They were reporting that Quentin Tarantino's latest film, Inglourious Basterds, spelt incorrectly, mind you, and if you see it around the net before you start going, oh, they misspelled it, that is on purpose. The trailer for this is now online. Now, I actually have the trailer here, and I thought I would play a little bit of it because I just love what Brad Pitt is doing. So have a listen to this.
Ten hot! Eyes forward!
My name is Lieutenant Aldo Rain. And I need me 8 soldiers. We're gonna be dropped into France dressed as civilians. We're gonna be doing one thing only. Killing Nazis.
Yes, sir!
Members of the National Socialist Party have conquered Europe through murder, torture, intimidation, and terror. And that's exactly what we're gonna do to them. We will be cruel to the German. And through our cruelty, they will know who we are. They will find the evidence of our cruelty in the disemboweled, dismembered, and disfigured bodies of their brothers we leave behind us. And the German will not be able to help themselves from imagining the cruelty their brothers endured at our hands, and our boot heels, and the edge of our knives. The German will be sickened by us. The German will talk about us. And the German will fear us. Nazi ain't got no humanity. They need to be destroyed. Each and every man under my command owes me 100 Nazi scalps. And I want my scalps.
looks fabulous. Anyway, that's Tarantino's take on World War II, and I'm sure it'll cause some controversy when it comes out. The trailer, you're not seeing Vision, you're only hearing it, and the trailer is extraordinarily violent looking, so I think it's going to be a real Tarantino-esque violent fest. I am looking forward to it a lot. It is scheduled for release on August 21st. It stars Brad Pitt, Diane Kruger, Melanie Laurent, Christopher Waltz, Daniel Brühl, Eli Roth, Sam Levine, BJ Novick, etc., etc. And it also apparently has Samuel L. Jackson in it. So I am looking forward to this. This has been talked about for a long, long time, and Tarantino has finally gotten around to putting this together. So I am looking forward to this. Other bits of film news. I heard this today, and I just had to share this with you because it's, I don't have any more details at this point, but it's one of the most ludicrous-sounding projects I've heard about in a long time. Apparently, they want to make a big-screen version of the board game Candyland. I don't know if any of you remember Candyland from when you were a child, but they are planning a film version of the board game. Now, the part that got me was it's being directed by the director of Enchanted. Okay, so it's a children's film. That's not a problem. But the writers are the writers of Tropic Thunder and Idiocracy, which just blows my mind that they're going from those films to Candyland. More information as we get it. As I say, this I only heard about this for the first time today, so I will look into this for you. Another little piece of film, or this is actually television news, Nicolette Sheridan is leaving Desperate Housewives. Apparently she wants to move on to other projects, and so she is leaving the series at the end of season four. She moved to Boston. The character moved to Boston, and we are now seeing at the end of season five she is going to depart. So that's kind of sad for the Desperate Housewives fans. I got to say, I actually kind of lost it with Desperate Housewives. I really loved the first season, and then I kind of drifted away during the second season. It didn't have the same allure as it did the first season. I was actually a very avid watcher in the first season. Another piece of film news. We are no longer just remaking films, it would seem. We are now remaking sequels because Rob Zombie's teaser poster has just been released for Halloween 2. Now, I don't know if this is a direct remake of the original Halloween 2 or he's spinning it off into his own Halloween 2, but apparently it does pick up right at the end of Halloween 1, which is where the sequel to the original picks up from. So it'll be very interesting to see where this is going. The other thing that really got me about this was they're referring to Halloween 2 as just H2. Do we really have to abbreviate everything, ID4, etc.? It's just a T2. It seems that we want to abbreviate everything. We can't remember titles anymore. Come on, I think we can start remembering some titles. All right, Eliza Dushku, who I am a big fan of, has apparently come out publicly saying that she wants to play Black Widow in Iron Man 2. Now, for those who have been following casting news, this is, remember, none of this is written in stone until really people sign dotted lines and go in front of the cameras. But apparently Emily Blunt was originally cast as Black Widow, but is possibility that she may be moving on because she has an option with 20th Century Fox. And they want her to play a romantic lead in Gulliver's Travels. So she may be moving away from Iron Man 2. And Eliza Dushku has thrown her hat into the ring, basically saying, this was actually on the Howard Stern show, that she would really like to play Black Widow. And to quote her, she says, "They're doing Iron Man 2, and I'm so perfect for the Black Widow character that they just need to get into it. They need to understand. I just learned Russian because I had to play a Russian girl in Dollhouse, which is Joss Whedon's new series." So it'll be interesting to see if Eliza does get the role. I actually really like Eliza Dushku. For those who don't know, she played Faith on Buffy and went on to do True Calling, the other series. And now she's in this new series called Dollhouse, which is another Joss Whedon who made Buffy. So it'd be interesting to see if she actually manages to pick up that role. It'd be nice to see her on the big screen. Here's a little bit of geek stuff for you. Once again, this is for the comic book fans and also for just fans of Watchmen in general. Apparently in the UK, you can go to a website called MinuteMinArcade.com. I'll put that onto the show notes when we publish this episode, where they've actually got a little kick-ass old-school style Watchmen video game, very much in the old 8-bit days, done in the 8-bit style of, say, Double Dragon and stuff for those who are old enough to remember. And you can play it for free at this site. Now, the article was actually on Slash Film, and it was interesting to note that they actually said that, UK are having a lot of fun with the marketing of Watchmen, and America doesn't seem to be getting this. this stuff. So why does there seem to be a holdup at this point on the marketing of Watchmen? Is it because of the court case that's just been resolved? I don't know. But I am going to, after I finish recording this, go over to that website and play the game because it looks like a lot of fun. Now, just to fill our hearts full of confidence, they have announced the director for the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. Yes, they're remaking Nightmare on Elm Street. And they've actually announced that the director of the new remake is going to be Samuel Bayer. And if he's not a household name, that's not surprising, because he actually is a music video director. But what got my attention about this article was the fact that he actually directed the Smells Like Teen Spirit music video for Nirvana. Now, the reason he got this job was because Nirvana looked at his test reel and they felt that it was the worst one that the band had ever seen. And that's why they hired him for the grungy clip. And of course, his clip is now known as a classic of music videos. So the fact that he was hired because they thought his clip was one of the worst doesn't fill my heart full of confidence for a remake of Nightmare on Elm Street. Anyway, we'll see. Once again, we wait until the film actually comes out to pass judgment on it. Another piece of news that caught my attention was that the Wachowski brothers may have a new film online. They were originally planning a film called Plastic Man, which is another superhero film. But they have had run into some problems and some delays because Warner Brothers has done a bit of a shakeup of their major projects, which is not unusual for Warner Brothers. They do this a lot. This has actually happened way back when Tim Burton was doing Superman before Bryan Singer got involved. They shelved everything back then and reshuffled everything back then as well. So this is not unusual for Warner Bros. To do this, but while they're waiting for what's going on with Plastic Man, apparently another project has fallen in their laps, and they may be doing a Superman film. This comes about because Bryan Singer is apparently not going to helm another Superman film, because Warner Brothers actually wants to reboot the franchise. They obviously don't feel that the direction that Bryan Singer went with doing a follow-on film with Superman Returns was quite right, and the box office kind of reflects that. And so they are thinking about rebooting it a la Batman Begins. And so Bryan Singer has moved on because he wants to work on the Logan's Run remake, which he's been in development for with a long time. So with him out, they're now looking and shopping around for a director, and it looks like, according to James McTeague, who directed V for Vendetta and is a good friend of the Wachowskis and does a lot of their second unit, he says that it's very possible that the Warner Brothers executives may take an entirely new direction with Superman and look for the Wachowskis to come in and do it for them. Now, if this happens, then James McTeague also went on to say that it's very possible that he may direct Plastic Man if it ever gets off the ground. So, interesting. I wait to see if this actually gets announced or if this is going to go ahead. Wachowski's doing Superman. An interesting notion. I'm not sure. Do we have Superman in black leather? I don't know. Michael Moore is back. Yes, according to an article on Slash Film, Michael Moore's film may be about the bailout and about the current economic crisis in America. Now, it's interesting because originally, the rumor was going around that it was going to be, his next film was going to be a quasi-sequel to Fahrenheit 9/11, which kind of makes sense. Now that the Bush administration is out, you can kind of look back on the second half of the administration and see what went wrong or what went right, depending on your political views. However, this doesn't seem to be the case, because his new film, which isn't titled yet, seems to have an end of the empire tone with a focus on the United States' recent economic problems. And to quote Michael Moore in a letter that was sent out to people who work on Wall Street, it says, "I am in the middle of shooting my next movie and I am looking for a few brave people who work on Wall Street or in the financial industry to come forward and share with me what they know. Based on those who have already contacted me, I believe there are a number of you who know the real deal," in quotes, about the abuses that have been happening. "You have information that the American people need to hear. I am humbly asking you for a moment of courage to be a hero and help me expose the biggest swindle in American history." So Michael Moore is on the attack again, and he is moving into the financial crisis. So it'll be interesting, more news on that as we find out about it. Now, the geek world was in an absolute tiz today, actually for the last couple of days, because Christopher Nolan has announced his next film. And it's not the third Batman film. So people are starting to say, oh, he's not going to come back for Batman 3, blah, blah, and especially considering Warner Brothers just made an announcement saying that they want 7 Batman films, and people are going, oh, but Christopher Nolan's moved on. Well, let me remind people that between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, Christopher Nolan directed another film. He directed The Prestige. So his next film is actually a film called Inception, Inception. I don't know what it's actually about yet, but he has made absolutely no comment about not directing another Batman film or anything like that. He is just doing another film in the middle. So I'm not surprised at this in any way, shape, or form. And I don't think we should jump to any sort of conclusions about the fate of Batman 3 yet. Now, speaking of Batman, Christian Bale, and for those who don't remember, I am going to play you a little bit of Christian Bale going ballistic, because we all remember this from last week. So let me just fire this up for you. And have, just to remind you, Christian Bale went ballistic on set of Terminator Salvation last week when his director of photography walked into the shot while he was doing a shot, and this was Christian Bale's reaction.
Kick your fucking ass! I want you off the fucking set, you prick!
I'm sorry.
No, don't just be sorry. Think for one fucking second. The fuck are you doing? Are you professional or not?
Yes, I am.
Do I fucking walk around and rip that? No, shut the fuck up, Bruce. Do I want? No! No!
Okay, so that once again, that was only the first 22 seconds of what is pretty much about a 5-minute diatribe out of his mouth. Well, according to news.com.au, Dark Knight star Christian Bale is sorry for his on-set meltdown. I read from the article, it says Batman star Christian Bale has apologized for his expletive-laden tantrum during the filming of a new Terminator film, saying he was out of order beyond belief. Well, I think so. His meltdown has been the subject of many parodies and has been the subject of much criticism over the internet over the last week. It's just been all over the place, including remixes. People are taking the meltdown and they're remixing it with music, and there's been a whole rash of these all over the internet. Anyway, the 35-year-old British-born actor called Los Angeles Morning Show KROQ radio, and he apologized for his outburst. And he actually said it had been a miserable week for him, and he does have a potty mouth, but he was way out of order. Now, the thing that got me about this apology was that the apology was aimed at the director of photography, whose name is Shane Hurlbut. Now, the thing that gets me about this is that throughout the diatribe, he keeps referring to Bruce. Can anybody send a comment to me, or if Mr. Bale is listening, who the hell's Bruce? Was there somebody else there that he was yelling at as well? Because they haven't mentioned Bruce in this retraction or this apology anywhere. Anyway, so he goes on to cynically say, you know, please judge the film on its own merits and don't judge it on my outburst. Well, you know, I think the outburst will be forgotten about. I mean, the internet is fickle, and over time we will forget about everything because that's what we do. But, you know, the bottom line is, as I said last week, there's no excuse for bad manners. He really needed to take that offset, talk to the guy, even if he was angry with him, and not do it in front of everybody. Okay, last piece of film news that I have here is actually kind of a frivolous piece, and I thought this was relevant because another one of our featured reviews today is The Reader, and according to news.com.au, Kate Winslet has said that she's learning to love her bum, and you know what? I've always loved her bum, so I don't know what her problem is. But according to this, it says actress Kate Winslet has finally come to terms with her most famous feature, her voluptuous bottom. And she goes on to say that I'm going to start loving my backside because I don't know anyone who does that. And I want to be able to say to my daughter, I love this. She basically goes on to say in the article that she has struggled her entire life with feeling that her bottom was not her best feature, etc., etc. But she's decided that after The Reader, where she does a lot of nude scenes, that she's just going to embrace and love her body for the way it is. And I say, good on you, Kate. That's the way you should think. Okay, on to tech news. A little bit Apple-centric to start us off with. MacRumors.com has actually put up a whole bunch of articles. Now, some of these, some of these will not be relevant to anybody who's not a Mac user, but some of these are relevant just because that they are some of their their other devices, not their necessarily the computers. One of these devices in particular was the Apple TV. Now, I love my Apple TV, but there is a few things that I would love to have changed about it. And in fact, I've actually used the patch stick and made it so that I can do the things I want to do, but it would be nice if they were built in. So according to this, Apple is now surveying new Apple TV owners to get an idea of what customers usage habits are surrounding the digital media appliance. The email sent to some Apple TV owners reads, now I didn't get it, but I'll read it from here. It says, please take a few minutes to complete this survey to help us understand how you use your Apple TV. Your responses will remain completely confidential and results will be viewed only in aggregate. We value and appreciate your input. Now, the only thing I can think of is this: with this article, is that a new version of Apple TV is obviously coming out, and they are obviously planning new features for it. Now, my first reaction is, if I had received this survey, DIVX and external hard drives, anyone? Because that's exactly what I would like. The internal hard drive on the Apple TV isn't big enough for the amount of media that I want to keep on it. And I would really like it to support other features other than the iTunes formats, because, you know, I do feed stuff on it from all different sources, and I have Mac and PC friends. And it would be lovely to be able to just put formats in there like other media players. Now, my hope is, with the DRM being taken off of the music in the Apple iTunes store, maybe they're going to loosen up some of the other DRM issues and maybe make the Apple TV play more features. It'll be very interesting to see. The other feature I would really like, and I doubt I will ever see it in an official release, is Hotspot Shield, because I do live in Australia, and with the patch stick, I can now access Hulu, but I can't access it on the Apple TV because there is no way for me to tell it that I'm not in the United States, and so it won't allow Hulu to play down here. On my Mac, I just fire up Hotspot Shield and I can watch Hulu, which would be lovely. All right, but that's a whole issue of regions and copyrights, and it just gets crazy. Now, apparently, Apple has asked Google not to use the multi-touch in their new Android phones. Apparently, Apple has a patent on it, and they have said, please don't use it. And apparently, Google has backed down. They've agreed, and they aren't going to use multi-touch. Now, my question about this article is, where does this leave the Palm Trio? I think that's what it's called, which is also going to have a multi-touch. The Pre is going to have multi-touch. So where does that relate to all of this? I don't know. I'm not a Palm user, and I will wait to see more information on that. Now, there is another rumor circling around the iTunes store or around the iTunes services, which says, and this is not official, once again, this is actually Apple Insider is reporting that Apple might be developing an on-demand video service that would allow users to stream their purchased iTunes movies and TV shows from Apple servers for playback on their personal devices. This is for people who want to rent it but don't necessarily want to have to download the whole thing, wait for the download, then they're stuck with the download, etc., etc., etc. Also, trends are now showing that most people aren't saving it. They prefer the rental model. They don't want to buy it. They only want to watch it and then get rid of it. And they're saying that if this does go ahead, it may be a cheaper service because you're not actually keeping a physical file. This actually excites me a lot. Problem is, I'm in Australia, and even if they do implement this, it could be years before we get it down here. Anybody has any information on any of these Apple stories, please send us feedback at feedback@geekactually.com. I value all feedback that I get. The other piece of Apple news that caught my eye is that apparently Apple retail stores are going to be receiving a facelift in the coming months, where they're going to highlight the software rather than the hardware. There's going to be a lot more about what can you do with your Mac, et cetera, et cetera. And this makes me wonder if this is involved in because of the economic crisis and whether or not hardware sales are actually starting to fall down a little bit. Are they focusing more on the user experience, the software, etc.? And I think that's a plausible explanation. The other question I had about this article was that will this apply to international Apple stores or only the American Apple stores? Because in the international market, the Macs don't have the same market penetration as they do in America. So I'm wondering if they are going to change the focus on international stores or keep the focus on the hardware in international stores where they don't have as much penetration. We'll have to wait and see. That's all I can say about a lot of these articles because, you know, news comes and goes. What can I tell you? Now, just crossing stuff off here as we go here. Got that. All right, now, one of my pet stories that we have been covering for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks is the internet censorship that is going on here in Australia. Now, for you Americans, you must listen to this and just scoff at us Australians and go, how silly you all are. But for those who haven't been keeping up, and I'm sure you have, I'm going to cover this in a nutshell because we've got three stories that are related to this. Basically, the new federal government here in Australia wants to implement what they call a clean feed. Basically, it is a firewall setup which would ban certain sites, what they call blacklisted sites. Now, they claim that the blacklist is mostly child pornography and, you know, racist sites, etc. But interestingly enough, they won't release the blacklist, so we don't know exactly what's on that list. And apparently, there is more sites that are going to be banned than just what's on the blacklist. Now, there's been protests about this. CleanFeed.org has been dealing with this. StopTheCleanFeed.org has been dealing with this. There have been protests about this, etc., etc. Well, just before Christmas, there was supposed to be a trial run on this censorship filter. It never happened. Now, I am with the ISP IINet, which is one of the biggest since they amalgamated with the old Aussie Mail. They have become one of the biggest ISPs in Australia. And they have an article on their website that basically talks about the fact that they are participating in the trial because they want to prove it doesn't work. And now, the complaints about this have been that it would, A, censorship, it would make us more censored than China with the firewalling. But the most important factor of all this was they said that it would actually slow internet traffic down. They actually said that with having to filter everything, it could slow it anything from 5% up to huge numbers. Now, I just got this first article, which actually says Optus and IINet, now Optus and IINet are two very large ISPs, have both been snubbed from the web filter trials. Now, it didn't happen before Christmas, as they said, but they are now planning them to start taking place in about 6 weeks, they said, but they won't release a date. Now, according to this, Australia's three largest internet service providers will not be included in the federal government's first trial of web filtering technology. This is as reported by news.com.au. Those three largest internet service providers would be Optus, IINet, and Telstra. Now, Telstra has openly said they don't want to be involved with this from the beginning, but Optus and IINet have both opted to do it, both for the same reasons. They want to prove it doesn't work. Now, Optus and IINet, after saying they were going to participate, are now absent from the list of six companies to take part in the trial that was announced by Communications Minister Stephen Conroy, who's the brainchild behind all of this. Apparently, they both applied to take part in the tests, and they have both been basically thrown out of it for some reason. The six companies, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that are participating are Primus Telecommunications, Tech2U, WebShield, OmniConnect, NetForce, and Highway One. Now, the first thing that grabs my attention about this list is that they have picked six relatively small ISPs. Now, Primus is the biggest of those, obviously, but they're all relatively small. Now, how are you going to test whether this has an impact on web traffic or not if you don't actually put it out there where web traffic can actually get to it? I mean, these six sites combined are not going to give us an indication of whether or not this is going to have the impact that we believe it's going to have. Senator Conroy said negotiations had started with other companies that had applied to take part. Now, I mean, IINet has been claiming that they've been part of this since before Christmas. What do you mean they're starting negotiations? It's just weird. Anyway, Senator Conroy says arrangements for the first phase of the live pilot have been finalized with six ISPs, while consultations continue with a number of other ISPs that have applied to take part. The government is well aware of technical concerns about ISP filtering, and that is why we are conducting a pilot to put these claims to the test. You can't test it with those little ISPs. You need the big ones. He then goes on to say that the live pilot will provide evidence on the real-world impacts of ISP content filtering, including for providers and internet users. Now, it does say that the first round of these tests will be non-compulsory for users. You can opt in or opt out. So once again, you've chosen six small ISPs, and then of those, they're now saying only about half of their users will participate. Now, you would also come to one other conclusion of all this, which is if somebody was doing something a little bit naughty, wouldn't you think that they're the ones who are going to opt out? So I think it's a very, very strange trial, and I don't think it'll actually prove anything. IINet has been vocal, according to this article, it says IINet has been a vocal critic of the government's controversial filtering plan and last year said it would take part in the trial to prove the scheme was unworkable. I agree with that 100%. I think you can't prove any of the things that people are complaining about with that small user base. Now, it does say here that it does say on this story there's comments, and there's one comment in particular here that I've highlighted. It says it's from KK, and it says, "I'm with iPrimus at the moment. If they implement this web filtering, I shall not be with them any longer. It's not the removal of kiddie porn and terror sites that I object to, but the fact that it's regulated by the government. What's to stop them adding sites to the blacklist without consulting the public? If they can block the sites, then they could also log the people who do access these sites and pay them a visit." And I agree, that's actually been one of the comments that we made several weeks ago when we first started talking about all of this, was the fact that there is, if they don't release the so-called, in quotes, blacklist, how do we know what they're blocking? We don't know if they're just blocking stuff because it doesn't fit their political agenda. I'm sorry, the government should not be involved in this. Following along from that article, Primus Communications has come out with their own article, which basically compares the compulsory web filtering to China. Now, Primus Telecom is the largest internet service provider of the six announced. And he actually, the general manager, basically Andrew Sims, actually said, "We've got instances of that around the world, particularly in China, where the government forces filtering upon their population. My professional opinion is I don't really believe that forced filtering is a good option." And I agree with him. He basically goes on to say that we cannot have compulsory censorship, and it needs to fall into the hands of the parents and, you know, people's own goodwill. If people are breaking the law, then punish them. If they're not, don't punish them. Mr. Sims said Primus customers would not be forced to take part of the trial, which he expected to begin in late April or early May. He said customers will be notified that there is such a trial happening and then they can opt into it. Customers who feel that it's an invasion of privacy or who don't wish to participate for whatever reasons won't have to. So, once again, we have that same argument. So we have a non-compulsory trial with only six small ISPs. So really, we're not seeing a full trial on this at all. We're getting something that will prove to the government that what they're saying will work. But in the real world, I don't think it will. He goes on to say that filtering should be optional. He says, if a family chooses not to have their children exposed to some of the nasty stuff on the internet, that's an option by using net filtering software. I just think that we really need to be very careful about this whole censorship issue, because we start getting into a very slippery slope of, well, you know, we think it's good for you. Basically, Australia is starting to be called the nanny state, and it really is starting to feel that way. Now, just on that same topic, the third story that came out about this is actually unrelated to the trials, but just, and I was going to bring this up last week, so I won't, this is actually last week's news. We just missed this story, unfortunately. I just wanted to bring up that people need to keep a calm head about this and keep talking about it and not fighting. Everybody has a difference of opinion, and there are going to be people out there who do support the idea of this net censor. I don't agree with you, and that's my right to not agree with you, and I think we all need to put our points across, and sane minds will hopefully prevail in the end. Apparently, a death threat has been made against a vocal opponent of the federal government's web filtering plan, Geordie Guy. He apparently came home and received a threatening phone message last month that said, in quotes, "cut the libertarian bullshit or you'll be sorry." Now, he actually believes that this came from the Australian Christian Lobby Managing Director Jim Wallace, not him personally, but a follower of him. He has no proof of that. This is only allegation, okay? And Mr. Wallace came back and basically said he does not believe that the threat against Mr. Guy was connected to his organization. But, you know, I think we all need to just stop And really, don't attack each other. We need to all write to or contact our member of parliament and basically let your opinions be heard there. And that being said, you should also get out and mobilize. Tell people about it. There are actually a lot of people out there who don't know that this is happening. They don't follow tech news, and it is our job as tech people to really get out there and help push the news to non-tech people. So everybody should be out there, and I know that we're all, well, I shouldn't say this, it gets very political, but I spoke to somebody today who actually said this, who said, I'm still supporting Rudd's government because anything but Howard, who was our last prime minister. Now, you may like John Howard, that's fine, I'm not going to get into the political debate, but all I can say is I'm not bagging out Kevin Rudd's government. I'm just saying that in this particular instance, with this particular policy, I disagree with this policy. All right. Last couple of pieces of tech news, and then we're going to go on to our feature reviews. Apparently, Facebook owner and designer, or supposed designer, Mark Zuckerberg, has been forced to pay out a large sum of money in a settlement in a court case. Now, this was supposed to be a confidential case, and it has been leaked, unfortunately. It's been let slip by a law firm that was involved in it. Apparently, Mark Zuckerberg was accused of stealing the concept of Facebook from his roommates when he was at university, who he was actually doing some work for, and they have taken him to court. The roommates have now got another company called ConnectU. And with this particular case, it has now all been settled. Facebook has paid to settle the lawsuit $65 million U.S. This is what the slip-up has revealed. And basically, the case included a negotiated settlement that includes Facebook buying ConnectU for an undisclosed amount of cash and stock, according to these court documents. Well, the undisclosed amount apparently is $65 million U.S. dollars. So it's all been settled now and so forth, but I think it's a little bit of a slur against Mark Zuckerberg, who was considered quite a genius for creating Facebook. It may not have all been him. Once again, this is opinion and rumor and speculation, and an article that was written in news.com.au. The other piece of big news that has actually come up this week is that Vodafone and Hutchison Telecommunications have merged, or they're going to merge in Australia. Now, what does this mean for the user, I guess, is that, well, they're claiming that they're going to get better service, they're claiming you're going to get better coverage, etc., because of the two brands blending together. What does it mean for the people who actually work for the companies? Well, okay, according to the news.com.au article, they said tough economic times have triggered an upheaval in Australia's $13 billion a year mobile sector, and its number three and four players, Vodafone Australia and Hutchison 3, forced into a merger. It has been a long predicted move. This is they've been talking about this for some time. The two companies will merge and streamline their combined $4 billion a year businesses to take aim at the number two market spot, which is held at this moment by Singtel and Optus. Now, the new group, it will be named VHA, which I'm assuming stands for Vodafone Hutchison Australia, but they will actually work under the brand name of Vodafone. So Hutchison 3 will become Vodafone stuff. And between them, they actually have more than 6 million customers. And the unfortunate side effect of this is that they're actually saying that there will probably be many jobs lost as they merge these two companies together. Now, that doesn't help, but we'll see how this actually helps the company. So if you are a Vodafone or Hutchison client, as I am, oh no, actually I'm not anymore. I used to be a Vodafone customer. I'm now an Optus customer. But if you are a Vodafone or Hutchison customer, you might want to keep your eyes on that story because it may affect you. Last bit of tech news, and then we're going to move on. Actually, I have two, but the other one's really not that big of news. Not for us here in Australia. Anyway, apparently Amazon has unveiled a slimmer Kindle. Kindle is their book reader, their electronic book reader. They're releasing Kindle 2, which is coming out very soon. And apparently it's slimmer, has better battery life, etc., etc. The only problem with this story for me is that we don't get the Kindle in Australia because we haven't got an Australian Amazon store, and it's not supported here in Australia yet. the day that that becomes available in Australia, I'll be buying one because I love it. I love the device. So go to Amazon.com if you want to see what the Kindle's all about. And for our Australian users, you can go to Amazon.com, have a look at the Kindle, and drool because we don't get it yet. The last piece of news in the tech world is that the new Mac OS is coming out soon. It's called Mac OS 10.6 Snow Leopard. Now, the big thing about Snow Leopard is that it's really not a major overhaul to the operating system on the surface, not like Leopard was. Leopard had added, you know, 300 new features and all this new eye candy and everything else. Apparently, Snow Leopard isn't doing that. I haven't seen it myself yet, but apparently it's mostly under the hood where the changes are. They're improving security, improving performance, et cetera, et cetera. But one thing that caught my attention, and we will do more about Snow Leopard when it comes out, but one thing that caught my attention, which was on MacRumors.com, apparently they're saying that the QuickTime player that is actually in macOS may not have a pro version anymore. Now, for those who use Macs, or if you are a Windows user and you have QuickTime installed, you will know that there's lots of things in the menus that are grayed out and say pro next to them. And if you pay the $29.95 upgrade, you get the pro version, which allows you to do editing and stuff like that with your QuickTime. Now, those who are pro users on Macintosh, so you have Final Cut Pro, for instance, you get the pro version by default. Otherwise, you have to buy the upgrade. Well, in Snow Leopard, it looks like QuickTime will actually come with all those features active. It looks like there is no pro version. It will just be the way QuickTime is. Now, this is the reason why this has come about was because in early builds of the Snow Leopard program that people have been seeing, they have noticed that the Buy QuickTime Pro and the registration links are gone off the program and none of the items are grayed out. Now, whether that is just for the demo versions or beta versions or whether that's the way it's going to be in the final product, we won't know until it actually comes out. All right, that is the news for this week. Let's get on to our feature reviews. We have three movies to review, and I don't want to labor them too much because you'll just get bored with me. But we need to talk about them a little bit, in particular two of them, because they're actually both nominated for Oscars this year. Now, the first film that we're going to actually review opened, I think, last week at the cinemas. It's actually, or 2 weeks ago. Now, America's had it for a little while. Australians, we've only just got it. It's actually the film that Mickey Rourke won his BAFTA for, and as far as I'm concerned, he will win the Oscar for, and that is The Wrestler. And here is a little listen to The Wrestler.
Really good. You really brought it.
Thank you. Thank you.
You hang in there. You got a lot of ability.
Have you ever seen a one-trick pony and feel so happy and free?
If you've ever I was wondering if I could get some more work.
All I got is weekends. Isn't that when you sit on other dudes' faces?
Have you ever seen a one-legged dog?
You have a beer with me? One beer.
If you've ever seen you have a daughter?
Oh, my daughter. She don't like me very much.
You should call her.
And you seen me.
What do you want from me?
I'm an old broken down piece of meat, and I deserve to be all alone. I just don't want you to hate me.
And you seen me, but I
two words. Three match.
Bring it. You know, with a little luck, this could be my ticket back on top.
Tell me, friend, can you ask for anything?
80s man, best ever.
Guns N' Roses.
Crew.
Yeah, then that Cobain had to come around and ruin it all.
90s suck.
All right. That was a little taste of The Wrestler, directed by Darren Aronofsky and starring Mickey Rourke, Marissa Tomei, Evan Rachel Wood. Now, I got to start by saying that this is not a film that you go to enjoy or to have fun. Okay, so I normally ruin say, do I have fun at the cinema, etc.? Well, you know what? The word I use to describe The Wrestler is devastating. I was affected by it quite deeply. I came out of the cinema and I had to actually just sit quietly and think about it for a while. Mickey Rourke's performance is staggering. I have absolutely no doubt in my mind at all that he will win the Oscar this year. It is the comeback role of comeback roles. Now, people would say, oh, but, you know, he already came back. I agree to a degree. I think Sin City was actually his comeback role. I think Marv, the character of Marv in Sin City was just fabulous. Did I just say Sim City? I think I did. Sin City. I think Marv was a terrific performance from him. And when I saw Sin City, I went, wow, that's just Mickey Rourke is back and it's fabulous. Well, to a degree, I was right, and I thought he was fabulous, but this is the film that where we go, that's the Mickey Rourke that we remember from films like Angel Heart. It's just an amazing performance from him. It is so heartfelt. It has been argued to me that, you know, he's just playing himself. Yeah, you could argue a little bit of that, and I could say that, yes, there is a lot of him that has been put behind that character, and I think that's what actually drives a lot of the emotion in the film. The film is sad. It's a deep film that is about, for those who don't know, a washed out, burned out, aged wrestler who was 20 years past his prime, but he really knows nothing else. And he's beaten up, his body is scarred, his brain is bruised. I mean, he is just a wreck in every way. Because all he knows is wrestling, he has basically just lost contact with everybody else in his life. His daughter is estranged from him. He hasn't seen his daughter in years and years and years. He doesn't know really how to relate to people. And really, he only is at home when he's in that ring and doing what they do. A reality check comes to him early in the film when he basically keels over with a heart attack. One bypass surgery later, and he's told that he can't wrestle anymore. And now the majority of the film that is left over is about him trying to build a life outside of the ring. And he's not suited to life outside of the ring, working in his supermarket job and trying to rebuild a relationship with a daughter who just can't stand him, and trying to build a relationship with probably the only person in his life that he has any sort of relationship with, which is a stripper named Cassidy, played by Marissa Tomei at the local strip club. Now, he would like to have a relationship with Cassidy, but of course Cassidy has a strict rule of not dating the customers. And Marissa Tomei puts in a wonderful performance as Cassidy / Pam. Her real name is Pam. And she is, it's a brave, brave performance. And as he said in the acceptance speech that we played earlier, she does take her clothes off a lot in this film. And her body is all tattooed with nipple piercings and the whole bit. And she just throws herself into this role completely. Now, I've been a big fan of Marissa Tomei for years. And she is another one who's been kind of wandering in the wilderness for a long time because nobody's really done anything with her. She won the Oscar for My Cousin Vinny, which was just fabulous. And since that time, she has appeared in a film here, a film there, but she's never really had any kind of star status that she deserves. And she's a terrific actress. Evan Rachel Wood as his daughter is good, but she really isn't in the film that much. She's only really got 3 or 4 scenes with him. And she spends a great deal of her time crying, and she is a real emo girl, and I have problems with it, problems with that anyway. So I kind of just go, you know, cheer up, emo girl, snap out of it. But, you know, she has her reasons for being as angry at him as she is. And the film builds to probably an inevitable conclusion, which I won't spoil for you, but I just found the film heart-wrenching in many ways, and I do highly recommend this film. It is a great film, and it's coming from a very unusual source because I'm not a very big fan of Darren Aronofsky. Now, for those who haven't seen Darren Aronofsky films, he was the man who directed a film called Requiem for a Dream a few years ago, which I just found so unrelentingly depressing that I almost walked out of it. I almost felt like I just can't take this anymore. It was just so down, down, down. And I was having a lot of trouble watching it. He then directed a little bit later on a film called The Fountain, which was a very troubled production to get it started. He was actually going to shoot it here in Australia at one point with Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston, and that all fell apart, and he eventually got the film made with Hugh Jackman and Rachel Weisz. And I've watched The Fountain, and all I can really say about The Fountain is I didn't understand it, and it makes me feel, it actually made me feel kind of stupid because I just had a lot of trouble understanding it. Beautifully made film. It looks like a dream, and it feels like a dream. I just found the story a little bit impenetrable. I also found the characters a little bit hard to relate to, which is interesting considering that the characters are so relatable in The Wrestler. Now, what I think is very interesting about Darren Aronofsky is that he's got a film coming up in 2010, according to IMDb, that's in pre-production. Apparently, he's doing a remake of RoboCop. Now, first of all, this is a very bad idea because RoboCop, in my mind, is one of those films that we've talked about before, which is in the untouchable category. And why do we need a remake of RoboCop? I mean, it's already a political statement in itself that is still relevant today as it was when it was made. So I don't think we really need this remake. But this is what he's working on. The thing with Darren Aronofsky I've discovered, though, is that even though it says it's in pre-production, even though it says it's slated, you can't predict it until it actually starts. I mean, The Fountain was 6 years it took him to get The Fountain made after Requiem for a Dream. As we said, there was a lot of trouble in the production of it, so we'll wait and see. This is another wait and see. There's a lot of wait and sees this episode. Back to The Wrestler, though. Unusual pedigree for it to come from, for me to say that I think it is probably, so far, one of my favorite films this year. I thought it was just, it's just the only word I can use. It was just devastating. It was just an amazing experience. Not one to go to have fun, though. I mean, this is a film you go and you watch and you just get absorbed into these characters and you become part of the life of these characters. And if you don't connect with the characters, you're not going to get anything out of the film. So you really have to just kind of let go and do it. Now, for those who are going to say, oh, but I hate wrestling, the wrestling really only is in the first 10-15 minutes of the film, and then at the end there's a match. The rest of the film is really a character drama. So just for those who are worried about the wrestling is pretty brutal, though, when it is on screen. So just a warning. Okay, so from the sublime to the ridiculous, my next film is actually one that opened yesterday, so that's Thursday in Australia. Once again, the United States market actually got this earlier than us, but it's the film My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Exactly what did you see?
Something was following us.
Most horrific event this town has ever seen. Authorities are calling this the Valentine's Day Massacre.
In the town of Harmony, something unexplainable.
Hello?
Is happening.
Come here, you better check this out.
What is that?
This January. Prepare to witness.
What do you want?
The most frightening 3D motion picture event to tear through the screen. My Bloody Valentine 3D. Nothing says date movie like a 3D ride to hell.
I just love that line. Nothing says date movie like a 3D ride to hell. All right. Before we say anything about this film, let me just state that, for the record, this is a dumb, dumb, dumb movie. Now that that's out of the way, I absolutely loved this film. I had so much fun watching it. It is brain dead, dumb, slasher horror, but it is so much fun. Now, for those who don't know, it is actually a remake of a 1981 slasher film called My Bloody Valentine, which was one of the slasher classics of its day. It has been reinvented and updated to our modern market, and in particular has been made in the new digital 3D format. Now, I am a big fan of the new digital 3D format, and this film can only be seen in digital 3D. If you can't see it in digital 3D, don't bother going to see it, because the film isn't worth it except for that. All right. The film directed by, and now I'm going to get the pronunciation wrong on this, but it's Patrick Lussier. Basically, it's the town of Harmony, excuse me, it's the town of Harmony, and 10 years ago, a miner went crazy and killed all these people, ripping their hearts out of their bodies. He was caught, then after he was caught, he then killed everybody in the hospital, but they eventually tracked him down, and they killed him. 10 years later, it seems that he's back, and it seems that it's Valentine's Day again, and he is again ripping people's hearts out. To explain any more of the plot is pointless, because there really is not much more to the plot. There's, you know, a love triangle going on, and there's they try and create some drama here and there. And, you know, the young cast does an okay job, you know, delivering all their lines, some of it a little bit laughable. But on the most part, you know, they carry the film through. But the real star of this film is the absolute graphic gore and the 3D. These are the absolute stars of this film. And Patrick Lussier does a wonderful job just throwing everything at you and doesn't let up for a minute. Now, the film is not scary in the slightest, but it will make you jump out of your seat and it will make you kind of squirm around not knowing what's coming. Well, actually, no, I take that back. You know exactly what's coming. It's not one of those films where the music builds and you go, oh, where's the killer? And then the killer doesn't come out just to jump out 2 seconds later, which really makes you jump out of your seat. No. Music cues are perfectly in time. The cues come up, the killer is there, and he does something horrible. And it's great fun. This is 1980s splatter film, stalker film classic brought to the 2000s. It really is. Old-fashioned gore effects and disemboweled bodies and eyeballs being popped out of heads and everything else that makes these sort of films fun. If you like a good splatter film or a good stalker film or a good horror film, and there's a lot of you who do, you couldn't go pretty wrong with this film. It's a lot of fun. If you go to this film expecting it to be a great film, give it up. The film is not that good. One warning to those prudes out there, and I am not one of them, but one warning to you prudes out there, there is an extended scene of nudity, full frontal female nudity that goes on for quite some time. It's almost as if they said these sort of films have to have nudity, so we'll pack it all into one scene, one girl, and she does the entire scene full frontal nude for the entire sequence of her moment, and then there's no other nudity in the rest of the film. But let me tell you, if the nudity is what offends you and not all the violence, then there's something seriously wrong with you. This film is violent, 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 gory, 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 and it's great, great fun. But once again, if you can't see it in 3D, don't bother. I had a blast watching this film, and I highly recommend it if that's what you're into. Patrick Lussier, for those who don't know, he worked with Wes Craven a lot. Wes Craven is actually going to be the subject of one of our showcases coming up soon. He directed the Dracula 2000 series of films. That was probably his biggest budget thing that he's done recently. I'm trying to bring up his IMDb profile page, but for some reason it just doesn't want to come up, which is very odd indeed. Oh, hold on. We have movement. We have movement at the station. Okay. Here we go. Now it's come. Oh, no, it hasn't. Now, for some reason, his page just does not want to come up. Okay. For our last review of the day, this is another Academy Award nominated film. It's called The Reader, and here is a clip.
Why don't you start by being honest with me?
I've never told anyone.
Maybe you should.
When I was young, I had an affair.
She was a friend of yours?
A kind of friend. She liked being read to.
You never tell me what you've been studying.
I'm studying a play. You can read it.
I'd rather listen to you.
Sing to me of the man, Muse. The man of twists.
Twists and turns, driven time and again off course.
Why do you leave early?
He always leaves early.
The affair only lasted a summer.
I can't live without you. Even the thought of it kills me. Do you love me?
Excuse me? I'm looking for Hannah Schmidt.
Schmidt has left.
Left? Did she say where she was going?
Silence in the court!
Nazi!
I'm going to take these cases one by one.
My name is Hannah Schmidt.
You joined the SS in 1943.
They were looking for guards.
I was a law student. I remember very clearly.
Societies think they operate by morality, but they don't.
Each of the guards would choose a certain number of women.
In the evening, Hannah Schmitz asked them to join her. She was making these women read aloud to her.
You keep telling us to think like lawyers. What are we trying to do?
We are trying to understand.
Look at that woman.
Which woman?
The woman you're always staring at.
I don't know which woman you mean.
Did she acknowledge the effect she'd had on your life?
She had done much worse to other people.
You were picking women out and saying you and you and you have to be sent back to be killed.
No, no.
Have you spent much time thinking about the past?
Doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what I feel. The dead are still dead.
Okay, so that's The Reader. Now, The Reader is an interesting film because it got a lot of controversy when it was first announced, I guess, as first being released, because of the nudity in the film. Now, the nudity is completely in context with this film. The film basically is about a young boy, German boy, who meets and is helped by this older woman who is a tram conductor, and they start having a fairly illicit affair that lasts a summer. And one of the elements of the affair is that she likes to be read to. At the end of the summer, she basically disappears, and he doesn't see her again. And the young boy goes on to become a law student. And while he's in his studies, they go to watch a war crimes case that is being conducted against these five women who were Nazi guards at a concentration camp. When he gets there, he realizes that one of the women is Hannah, the woman that he was having a relationship with. And he starts to discover that this past that she had that he never knew about. As the case progresses, he starts to realize, he never realized up until this point, that she is actually illiterate, and that's why she liked being read to. Hannah ends up taking the fall for the crimes that are being put against them so that she doesn't have to reveal that she can't read and he doesn't come to her aid. And then it goes on from there, her time in prison, and he basically starts sending her audio tapes of books that he's reading for her. It's a good film. I liked it a lot. It's close, but it doesn't quite reach brilliance. It misses on just a few points here and there, but the real standout of this film is Kate Winslet. I mean, Kate Winslet is just remarkable as Hannah. It's a really restrained, tight performance all the way through it. You can see this is a person who has stuff in her background. She holds on to the secret of not being able to read or being illiterate, and she's just tight as a drum throughout the entire film. She almost makes you feel uncomfortable whenever she's on screen, and it's a really remarkable performance. The young man in The Reader who is having the affair with her, which is David Cross, playing the young Michael Berg, is also doing a terrific job. As an adult, he's played by Ralph Fiennes, and you know, Ralph Fiennes does what Ralph Fiennes does, and I don't think he's outstanding in any way in this film. He's just doing what Ralph Fiennes does. But the young actor, David Cross, is doing a great job to foil Kate Winslet. So not foil as in to stop her, but to foil as in be her foil in the scene. He does a really good job. Now, the film is directed by Stephen Daldry, who I got to say I am not a huge fan of. I mean, he's okay, but I'm not a huge fan. I thought Billy Elliot was a lot of fun, which was his 2000 film. But The Hours that he directed with Nicole Kidman, I just found dreary. So I was actually kind of hit and miss on whether or not this was going to be the film for me. But I ended up enjoying it quite a lot. I actually made an observation today when I was talking to my lovely wife that there seems to be a lot of the films out at the moment are ambiguous. They're leaving things open. We're not really dealing with stuff as such. And then I say this because if you think about it, with the exception of Slumdog and Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which are fairy tales, The Reader, The Wrestler, and Doubt, the fifth nominated film, are all films that kind of leave you kind of wanting more. They're all kind of leave you feeling like, oh, well, you know, it's all kind of hopeless. Now, Doubt is a film that is in wide release already. We haven't actually covered it on the show. I have now seen Doubt, and we are going to review it next week because I'm making a point of making sure that all the films that are nominated are covered. We have now covered four of the five nominated films, and Doubt will be next week. The long and the short of it is I enjoyed The Reader. My final thoughts on The Reader were I enjoyed it. I do recommend it. Don't be put off by all of this nonsense that's been going around about the nudity. It is all in context with the film. I think the film is a brave film. I think the performances are brave. I think that it is a film that will be remembered. I think that we will look back on this and say that this was probably Kate Winslet's moment. And she did win the BAFTA, and so I am hoping that she'll win the Academy Award because I think she does deserve it. She's done a really, really good job on it. Anyway, that brings us to an end for this week. I do want to say thank you so much for joining us. Next week, Little Geek will probably be back on because we are reviewing iLife 09. Nicholas has been furiously testing iMovie 09 for the last week. So we will have him on next week to talk about his feelings on the new iLife suite. We'll be reviewing Doubt as one of our films. I'm sure we will have more. We will also be reviewing Oliver Stone's new film, W. And once again, the American listener going, but we had that months ago. Yes, unfortunately, for some reason, it has been held up and held up in release in this country. I went to see it at a press screening yesterday. And I have to say that I enjoyed it. We'll talk more about it next week. I think it's flawed in many ways, but we will talk about that in much more detail next week. In the meantime, remember, if you are an iTunes user, please leave comments on iTunes because those comments all go towards helping move us up the ladder. We're trying to get more exposure. We want to get onto that featured list, so please put your comments up there. As I said at the beginning of the show, if you have any comments, feedback, or requests, or you just want to have something said on the show, please send your emails to feedback@geekactually.com, or there is a contact form right on the website. Go to geekactually.com, click on contact, fill it in, and send it off, and your mail will come straight to us. You can also leave comments, criticisms, anything you want on the Geek Actually website. We have comments fields right there. You can talk to me directly on Twitter if you want. I'm David McVeigh on Twitter. Last but not least, we are looking for, this is a bit of an advertisement for you, we are looking for film reviewers. So if you feel that you are a reviewer that has a good understanding of film, you aren't going to, one of our missions is not to completely intellectualize cinema. We're trying to go back to having fun in cinema and actually enjoy the cinema experience. If you feel that you're on that par, drop me an email at info@geekactually.com. Tell me about what you want to do and so forth, and we will see if we can get you to start putting some reviews up on geekactually.com. I do encourage to get some more bloggers up there and to get some more reviewers onto the site. I don't have time to do it all myself, unfortunately, and I would really love to get some more of your input. So if you are interested, write to me at info. So my name is Dave McVeigh. Write to me at info@geekactually.com. That is for people who are interested in reviewing. If you just want to send feedback on the show, that's feedback@geekactually.com. And I will talk to you next week. In the meantime, go see more movies, in particular all of the Academy Award nominated films, because they're coming up fast. Go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And I will talk to you more next week. Maybe.